Have you ever been so committed to change in one moment of time, but when it came time to commit, you were not as committed? Do you sometimes feel the pain of change is far more uncomfortable than the pain of staying the same? Have you ever felt like Apostle Paul, "My spirit is willing, but my flesh is weak"? And what that means is that I say I want to do something. I say I want to change something. I say I want to be somebody different, but I continue to choose not to be. Today, I want you to have three key takeaways from our time together. Number one, I want you to understand where the battle is. There are battlefields all around us, but the greatest battlefield is in the mind. Number two, the understanding that we have more control over our experience than most people can understand or consider. We are at cause, not effect. And number three, I want to give you six key principles that will help create and or reinforce the mindset needed as a warrior. We got to get our minds right. The battle is in the mind. Remember, as a human being, we are a triune creature. We have a body that's a machine. It's our tabernacle. We got to follow the rules. We got a mind that runs the body. The battle is in the mind. And we are not the body. We are the spirit. The spirit running the body is what we call the soul. The spirit running the brain is what we call the mind. And so think about how replete the word of God is with God telling us the battle is in the mind. All these Bible verses are from the Amplified Bible. Philippians 4:8. Finally, believers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable and worthy of respect, whatever is right and confirmed by God's word, whatever is pure and wholesome, whatever is lovely and brings peace, whatever is admirable and of good repute, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think continually on these things. Center your mind on them and implant them in your heart. How about Romans 12:2? And do not be conformed to the world any longer with its superficial values and customs, but be transformed and progressively changed as you mature spiritually by the renewing of your mind, focusing on godly values and ethical attitudes so that you may prove for yourselves what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect in His plan and purpose for you. That's why today we're talking about transforming your mind, six key principles of a warrior mindset. 2 Corinthians 10:5 says, "We are destroying sophisticated arguments and every exalted and proud thing that sets itself up against the true knowledge of God. And we are taking every thought and purpose captive to the obedience of Christ." And in a nutshell, Proverbs 23:4-23 wraps it all up. "Watch over your heart with all diligence, for from it flow the springs of life." As warriors, we must think about our thinking. And one of my favorite people in this arena of metacognitive is Dr. Edward de Bono. De Bono's revolution began in 1967 with the book, The Use of Lateral Thinking. It is lateral thinking that creates new ideas. He said Einstein and Darwin were lateral thinkers. Studies have shown that 90% of error in thinking is due to error in perception. See, nobody responds to the reality, ladies and gentlemen. What we respond to is our perception of reality. So he goes on to say, if you can change your perception, you can change your emotion, and this can lead to new ideas. Logic will never change emotion or perception. Phenomenal, right? See, de Bono was one of the first to use visual to control the auditory. He used pictures to put a frame around the narrative. Edward de Bono is regarded by many as the leading authority in the field of creative thinking, innovation, direct teaching of thinking as a skill. What he taught us is our focus is determined by our frame. They are filters. We use these things called filters, and we all use them. As a matter of fact, if we didn't use them, we'd be autistic. Autism is a system where we get overloaded with data, where the filters are shut off. I think I shared with you a while ago, and I think it was Fast Company identified this, that we have 34 gigabytes of information a day going through our heads. It's enough to shut down any computer system. We have 16,000 to 18,000 internal conversations a day, Dr. Caroline Leaf tells us. We only use 3 to 5% of our brains consciously. Majority of our experience at the unconscious level. We've all driven home before without realizing how we've driven home, but we stopped at all the stops. We turned at all the turns. We did everything we were supposed to do with our body. But mentally, we were somewhere else. We are underaware, we are overwhelmed, and we are beside ourselves. How's that for use of prepositions, huh? See, we all have natural filters. If we didn't have these filters, we would have autism. What are the filters? They're called deletions, distortions, and generalizations. We use those so that we don't get overwhelmed, but because we overuse them, we miscommunicate pretty effectively. See, filters are used to eliminate things in order to achieve a desired result. When we use them in cooking, the unwanted elements are dredged, strained, discarded. When we use them in email, they weed out what or whom we don't want to read. What's left is what we use, what contributes to our meal, our engine, or our sanity. What do filters do? They're like frames. They control our focus. Frames are the way in which a thing is put together, an established order to shape, to form. It's controlling the focus in the discussion, like Dr. De Bono's six-hat thinking. See, frames give meanings to words. It changes our internal representation. The meaning of any experience in life depends upon the frame we put around it. Nothing in the world has any meaning except the meaning we give it. How we feel about something and what we do in the world are dependent upon our perception, dependent upon our frame, dependent upon our filter, dependent upon our narrative. If we perceive something as a, quote, liability, that's the message we deliver to our brain. Listen. And then the brain acts as if. The brain responds. The brain produces states of mind. Remember, the body releases 63 known chemicals, and those chemicals make me feel. In other words, they create states of mind that make it a reality. If we change our point of view by looking at the situation as an opportunity versus a liability, we actually chemically change how our body responds. We can actually change the way we respond to situations in life. And we control the frame. And if you're not doing it consciously, then it's still happening unconsciously. The frame through which we focus our attention directs our conversation and keeps us, quote, on course. The frame through which we see things helps to create our thoughts and feelings, our perceptions about the experience. These are where the feelings come from, the meaning we give it. You see, if two people are looking at the same picture, let's say a car, okay, red convertible Corvette, the frame that they're using affects what they're actually seeing. Consider, let's say one of those people just lost a loved one in a car accident. And the other person, let's say, is a 16-year-old boy. Now, both of those people are looking at the same vehicle. But their perception of what they're seeing, whoa, couldn't be much different, right? I mean, it couldn't be more different, right? The first person I discussed could see pain, death, an accident waiting to happen, the loss of a child. The second person, I don't want to even say what he sees. Freedom, sense of purpose, opportunity, right? Dot, 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 dot. Well, who's right? What if we change the frame from which they are viewing the situation? This is why I always say the battle is in the mind. And we're losing the battle. We have a world that has poor emotional intelligence. Teens are depressed. Older people, PTSD. Our pets have PTSD. Our grandparents have PTSD. And teens now are twice as likely to agree with the depressive statements. Listen, I can't do anything right. I do not enjoy life. My life is not useful. Now, you think of that frame. These teenagers wake up, go to bed, do drugs, do all kinds of stuff with the frame, their narrative being, one, I can't do anything right. Two, I do not enjoy my life. And three, my life is not useful. In other words, my life has no purpose. So you put that narrative on, you put that frame on, and you tell me where your hope is. You see, the share of teens who agree with those three phrases I just shared with you has doubled over the past decade. Think about that. See, this is the frame. This is the narrative of many young people today based on their belief systems. And what do you think? Everything we do or do not do is driven by belief. So what type of actions do you think are coming from those beliefs? This is why we need to understand as a warrior the tools available to fight this good fight. We have to get off of autopilot. Get in the game. There are no bleachers in life. It's a full participation sport, warrior. The time is now to get in control of our narrative, to control our frame of thinking, to control the belief system, and it matters. What we tell ourselves matters. This is the battle. Remember, we have 16,000 to 18,000 thoughts a day. What we believe is what we listen to over and over and over and over. It creates our focus, our belief systems, and everything we do or do not do and how we feel about it is driven by our beliefs. This is why there's a battle for the narrative. See, what we say to ourselves over and over is what we believe. Everything we do or do not do and the way we feel about it is driven by our beliefs. That's why the battle's in the mind. That's why we gotta get our minds right, because it creates the chemical response that is fire, that separates, that purifies, that tests. See, this represents our power of awareness, the needs in the environment. It represents vision, the ability to see what will be needed and where it will be needed and when it will be needed. It's called vision. It represents the now moment that there must be balance and we must be aware to shift our focus. See, we got to create an environment that allows us to do the behavior that supports who we are. Because if I'm this type of man, then I do these type of things. And if I do these type of things, then I'm this type of man. See how behavior and identity feed each other. I'm not the type of man who does this, or I'm the type of man who doesn't do this. Don't you hear the narrative? That's the fire triangle. See, it affects the narrative. What we say to ourselves over and over is what we believe. Everything we do or do not do, and the way we feel about it, is all driven by our beliefs. What we tell ourselves over and over and over. This is why the need to be continuing learning is so critical to be under construction, to be Semper Gumby, to be requisite variety. New approaches to old problems, new ways to explain simple concepts. We have to get in the game. That's why I continually learn. Remember, of the 78 organs in our body, we only have one that never has to deteriorate. It is our brain. But the problem is we think far less today than we did 100 years ago because we have AI and technology. This is why you gotta work your noodle, work your noggin, because atrophy says if you don't use it, you will lose it. And we are being told not to critically think anymore. But if Dr. DeBono was alive today, he would be offended by the lack of lateral thinking, creative thinking, constructive thinking, critical thinking. You know, I read a book about 6 months ago, and I think it's one of the better books I've read. I don't like the title. It's called Un-F Yourself by Gary John Bishop. And what I like about it is he lays out seven assertions. It creates a narrative for you. Start your day every day. And I actually do this now. I have these seven at the beginning, but I have about 20 of them. And I have them in my bathroom mirror around my house. And my son says, Dad, I love that. He said that to me yesterday. My 9-year-old son, Benai, I love those things you put up there. And he asked me about this yesterday. And he's reading them. So I read them every morning. I remind myself who I am. Because if that's who I am, then I'm willing to act like that man. That's what is going on here. And he says there are seven assertions that you need to repeat to ourselves every day. Number one, I am willing. Number two, I am wired to win. Number three, I got this. Number four, I embrace uncertainty. Number five, I am not my thoughts. I am what I do. Number six, I am relentless. Number seven, I expect nothing and accept everything. See, these assertions create a frame. They create a narrative. All seven of these I could back up scripturally. So let me take a look at these seven assertions that Bishop talks about. Number one, he says, I am willing. Gary argues that everything you do stems from a willingness to do it. If there's something you don't like in your life, it's because you were willing to be in that situation. Don't like your body, your job, your financial situation? Well, it's because you're willing to stay there. Next time you don't like a certain part of your life, he says to ask yourself, am I willing? Are you willing to exercise and eat right if you want to lose weight? Are you willing to gain additional skills to better your work situation? Maybe the answer is no. Be honest with yourself. And if you're going to be honest with yourself, then stop complaining about your situation. If you're not willing to do what it takes to change it, then accept it. Number two, I am wired to win. And this is scriptural too. You are winning at something. Now, please hear this. You might not like the result you're getting, but I'm going to tell you something, that you are working perfectly. Now, I didn't say you were perfect, but we're all programmed creatures. So you're running your program. You are getting exactly the results you programmed yourself to get. So if you don't like the results, change the programming. As you change the programming, you change the results. It was Einstein that said the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. That's just crazy. So do something different to get something different. Number three, I got this. You know, when life seems unraveled, it's usually our perception of it that makes it worse. We got to remember that others have gone through this and currently going through maybe even more difficult situations. But you got to believe that I got this. And I say this, greater is he who is in me than he who is in this world. In my weakness, his strength is perfected. I must decrease so he can increase. So you know why I believe I got this? Because God says he's got me. And so he's got this. So I got this. Number four, I embrace uncertainty. Welcome to the real world. Welcome to the jungle. Much of life is out of our control, people. Whether our company downsizes, life is full of uncertainties. You can worry about them or wallow in them if they happen or don't. They say that about 85% of what we worry about never comes to fruition. But they also say 75% of stats are made up. So what do you know, right? Number five, I am not my thoughts. I am what I do. That's so great. I am not my thoughts. I am what I do. Boy, we can dice that one up, but just listen. Successful people do not become successful because they had great ideas. That might be part of it. They became successful, though, because someone acted on those ideas. They did. So if we're going to overcome our fear, do something. Don't just think about it. Number six, I'm relentless. What's a good one? Imagine traveling through a jungle in search of civilization. You could be 1 mile away or 100 miles away. There may be times when you may hit a dead end or have to backtrack to get on course. The important thing is to be relentless in your search for civilization. The jungle is full of dangers and unknowns, so why not be relentless in your search for success? And number seven, a great one, I expect nothing and accept everything. Much of life's sufferings comes from unmet expectations. You dream up what life should be like, and they're crushed when it falls short. The gap or gain, which one you focus on? What we say to ourselves over and over is what we believe. Everything we do or do not do and the way we feel about it is driven by our beliefs. That's why understanding the three key elements of lasting permanent change, its environment, its identity, and its behavior. When we have an environment that allows us to have behavior that supports who we say we are, then who we say we are is supported by what we're doing and is reinforced by the environment in order to do it. Remember, it was Bruce Lipton in the book, Biology of Belief. He said it's the cell membrane that actually drives the cell. And so he said technically that we are a community of 50 trillion cells, all driven by our environment. Environment's so critical. That's why I always equate environment to culture. What is environment? Environment's a solid ground through which all things take hold. It's the soil and agricultural. It's the foundation for all things to grow, sustain, or die. It is the surroundings or condition in which a person, animal, or plant lives or operates. C.J. Heck put it this way. We are all products of our environment. Every person we meet, every new experience or adventure, every book we read touches and changes us, making us the unique being that we are. So what is culture? Culture is repeated norms, acceptable behavior, expected and desired interactions, rules of conduct. I always say when I'm talking about culture, I'm not talking about yogurt. I'm talking about environment. The environment can be considered more the physical aspects, of course, the culture more of interactions, depending on the usage. However, the words can be interchangeable in many situations. Environment can be used synonymously with culture. And so what are our major environments? It's wherever we spend a regular amount of time in those cultures, and they affect us. It's either going to be fertile ground or it's going to be fungus among us. So what are the environments of our life? Well, we got our home life, right? Family of origin, habits. What do you do when the blinds go down, right? We have our business or vacation where we spend a majority of our waking hours, right? If you have a J-O-B, then you spend a majority of your working hours at that J-O-B, getting ready for that J-O-B, going to that J-O-B, or coming back from that J-O-B. Let me suggest you two other environments that you might not have considered. Well, you have your heart, right? Heart's hardened, forgiving, compassionate, cruel, vengeful, covetous. Whoa, there's an environment, right? Guard your heart from all the issues of life stem from it. From the overflow of your heart, your mouth speaks. And let me suggest that the greatest environment for most people is in their head. Remember Dr. Viktor Frankl said, between the stimulus and the response, there is a space. And in that space is our power. It is our freedom. Our head, where we keep a record of wrong, where we keep our pound of flesh, where we track everything that's ever been done to us wrong. I met the enemy, and he's living in my shorts. That's what most people in America should say today. And so there's culture all around us. You see what I'm saying? And I'm going to tell you, the ultimate environment, the ultimate culture, is the space between. I say it over and over, one of the most powerful quotes I've ever heard. Between the stimulus and the response, there is a space. And in that space is our power. It is our freedom. That's why I also believe it is one of the greatest battle, if not the greatest battle, because the battle between the stimulus and response, the battle that is in our mind, really affects our spiritual battle. It affects the battle for identity. It affects every other battle. That's why it could be the most important battle that we have. And because we need to take a look at our thinking, what is going on? What are those 16 to 18,000 thoughts that we have a day, those self-talks? What beliefs are we bringing into things? What prejudices, presuppositions? Yes, that's what I said. We're all prejudiced. Presuppositions, prejudice, prejudging, belief systems. We structure everything. And by the way, presuppositions are normal. The weird thing is when people pretend they don't have them. And I'm not saying presuppositions are negative. We just got to be aware of them. Because if you're arguing with someone about something, if you don't know what the structure of their basic belief system is, you're wasting your breath. Those are called presuppositions. In the branch of linguistics known as pragmatics, A presupposition is an implicit assumption about the world or backbone belief relating to an utterance whose truth is taken for granted. See, that's what assumptions, presuppositions, prejudice are. They're built in. That's why I always reference one of the sciences of logotherapy, derived from logos, a Greek word that translates as meaning, and therapy, which is divided as treatment of a condition, illness, or maladjustment. I'm going to give you a list of tenets that represent basic principles of logotherapy. Very important. Number one, life has meaning under all circumstances, even the most miserable ones. Number two, our main motivation for living is our will to find meaning in life. And number three, we have freedom to find meaning in what we do and what we experience. So those are the base belief systems in this field. The assumptions of logotherapy, we're talking about logotherapy, so let me give you the presuppositions. The prejudice, here they are, there's six of them. Number one, the human being is an entity consisting of body, mind, and spirit. Number two, life has meaning under all circumstances, even the most miserable. You see, so now someone that knows this, when you take a look at some abortion, say, listen, I want to abort a child because they're going to be dependent on me. I'm going to have to take care of them. This quality of life is terrible. Well, what does number two say? Life has meaning under all circumstances, even the most miserable. You see, as a Christian, I believe that God creates life and all has a purpose. Romans 8:28, for God causes all things to work for the good for those who love him or are called according to his purpose. See, those are underlying belief systems. Those are presuppositions. Those are prejudices. So in going back to logotherapy, number three, people have a will to meaning. Number four, people have freedom under all circumstances to activate the will to find meaning. Number five, life has a demand quality to which people must respond if decisions are to be meaningful. And number six, the individual is unique. Now, another prejudice, which is not necessarily bad, is also called our core value. See, all I'm going to show you is that we all do the same thing, that people are debating and arguing from a base set of belief systems. And as a leader, we need to understand that. This is why we meet people in their map of reality. This is what rapport is all about. Before we ever start to gain agreement, to argue, to debate, to sell anything, we first must meet people in their map of reality. In order to meet them in their map of reality, we must understand their map of reality. This is where what we need is not justice. What we need is understanding. Because if I can understand you a little bit better and you can understand me a little bit better, doesn't make sense we're in a position of a better relationship. And so if you can find out someone's core values, what drives them, you know where their base of belief is coming from. Core values are a form of prejudice. I'm not saying it's bad, but you should know. If someone has a core value, their number one value is they're a child of God and want to hear, well done, my good and faithful servant. You got to know that's going to drive every other decision. It's prejudiced. You see, these core values are a deep focus. They are the root beliefs that a person or organization operates from. They are principal perspectives that guide a person or organization's behavior with others. They become kind of like a litmus test, a comparison by which we judge other things by and through. Another added benefit of having core values as an individual and as an organization is they get you emotionally involved. They help fulfill the logotherapy aspect of our existence. They create a purpose-driven life. They have values. They're special. They tell us that I'm somebody. That's the value of a mission statement for organization, for an individual. They are developed from core values. You know, core values, by definition, are the deeply ingrained principles that guide all of a company's decision. And today I told you I'm going to give you six core principles that allow you to either put on or maintain the warrior mindset. And these ingrained principles guide all of our actions. They serve as a cultural cornerstone. Core values can become inherent, sacrosanct. They can never be compromised for convenience or short-term economic gain. This is how I help people write their mission statement. If someone has not been through my leadership training, which you can read about at likeitmatters.net or wayofwarrior.training, both of them, this is what I do in my training. And when I'm helping someone create a mission statement that has not been through my training, I have them do this. I said, listen, if I was to go up to the person who knew you best and to ask them to give me five words that described you, what would you want those five words to be? Notice I didn't ask what would those five words be. I said, what would you want those five words to be? And whatever five words that person tells you are their core values. These five words would be their core values, their core beliefs. They would be the litmus test by which they judge their life. Again, notice they are similar to prejudices, presuppositions. It's a narrative. And no matter what, for some people, they have things to say, oh, if I do that, if I got a divorce, I'd never be successful. For me, it was my weight. When I looked in the mirror, I see this fat person, I'd say, boy, overweight equals not happy equals not successful. And that's not true at all. But that was how I was beaten on as a kid and told I wasn't worthy. I was a fat boy, beaten on all the time. And so for the longest time, if I carried any extra weight, if I was overweight, I would never see myself successful. It was like the imposter syndrome. It was a presupposition for me. Overweight equals not happy equals not successful. Why? Because my dad beat on me all the time as a kid and called me fat boy. See, even NLP, I love NLP, right? NLP is my background. NLP has presuppositions. NLP has built-in prejudice. See, NLP is the owner's manual to the human experience. It's neuro-linguistic programming. And what NLP is about, it is about coding. It's the owner's manual to the human experience. NLP has under it a set of underlying beliefs, structure, scaffolding. These are the presuppositions, and they depend varying on who you are. But let me give you a couple quick of them. The map is not the territory. Words are not the item they represent. NLP presents a set of models and fully acknowledges that does not describe the exact reality. Neither does any model according to NLP. People respond to their experience, not reality itself. Remember, I talk about this all the time. Nobody responds to reality. They respond to their map of reality. Presupposition number three, behind every behavior, there's a positive intent. See, that allows us to put ourselves in someone else's shoes, to walk a mile in our moccasins. When you understand that every person is driven by something, what's in it for me, that even if you take something terrible, if you met it down enough, you could say there was a positive intent. Now, you might not like what they did, but if you can push your feelings aside, you'll say, wow, the positive intent that they were going for, I can see it. Now, what they did to get it, do not agree with, is not acceptable. I got to tell my son that sometimes. Son, what you did was not acceptable. You're better than that. See, this presupposition makes NLP very useful and highly applicable in personal development because it begins in understanding and acceptance. Here's another presupposition NLP. People are not their behavior. In the spiritual world, we say you hate the sin, but you love the sinner. In NLP, we say accept the person, change the behavior. And we all have beliefs that in lots of areas. It's conditioning. It's a narrative. It is through our beliefs and things that trigger things in another, the repetition of cause, effect. It is triggers. It is anchors. And what I do is I teach you how you work. I take things from the unaware and put them in the aware. I take things from the unconscious and I bring them into the conscious. Majority of our experience in this world is unconscious. In order to deal with it, we must move it into the conscious. And I teach you how powerful you are. I think some people, their greatest fear is not what they haven't done. Is their greatest fear is that they are able to do so much more and they're not doing it. You know, I end my graduation. You know, I do intensive leadership training. Go to wayofwarrior.training or likeitmatters.net. Here are the six key principles that will help create and reinforce the mindset needed as a warrior. Number one, keep it simple, soldier. Be a great kisser. Great warriors are great kissers. Keep it short and simple. People ask all the time, how you doing? This used to be one of my biggest problems. I would actually think people want to know. I would tell them a lot more than they need to know. And I had to learn, you don't need to tell everybody everything. And if we're going to be honest, most people really only care about themselves. And your success, my success, is not really a priority for them. Whether you like it or not, just understand people are self-absorbed, self-focused, self-concerned. Be different. Build people. Make it about them, not you. I believe rule number one about being a leader is it's not about you. Get off yourself. Warriors, success may be tied to the simplicity of the battle. Keep it simple, soldier. The number one weapon formed against us is confusion. The Bible says when strife is present, so is every other sin. So keep it simple, soldier. Be positive, focus on other people, and don't make it about you. Number two, own your space between. Remember, I keep saying the quote over and over and over by Dr. Viktor Frankl, between the stimulus and the response, there's a space. And in that space is our power. It is our freedom. You are a sponge. And when life squeezes you, the only thing that comes out of you is what's in you. When Jesus Christ walked this planet at the end of his 33-year ministry, he was hung on the cross. He had the flesh ripped off from the cat of nine tails. As he was beaten on, mocked, bled out, he said seven things on the cross. And the first one's really important. Forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do. See, when Jesus Christ was squeezed by the trials of life, which I would call crucifixion, a trial of life, what came out of him was love, mercy, forgiveness, understanding. Why? Because that's what was in him. Whatever you have in the space between, whatever you're holding on to, when you get squeezed by life, it's going to come out. So own your space between. That's number two. Number three, trust this process, life, and its conductor, Yahweh. Remember Jeremiah 29:11? For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you, not to harm you. Plans for hope and a future. It's an attitude, baby. Number four, up your environment. You'll never rise above the quality of the people in your environment. Up the quality of your circle of influence. Be around people that are better than you so you can become that too. People in our environment have an effect on our identity, and that identity affects how we behave. You'll never rise above the quality of the people you hang around with. So up your environment and be around people who have qualities that you want, who are better than you. Number five, control yourself. You know, the one person we have absolute control over is ourself. And we got to understand this. When we can understand the only person we have absolute control over is ourselves, that's freedom. Dr. Covey taught us to focus on the things that concern us and that we have control over, the circle of concern and the circle of influence. And the cool thing is, if we live an examined life, there are things about ourselves that concern us. And when we understand we have full control over it, now we can do some change work. We must quit attempting to control others. Our mind is 6 times faster than we can talk. We got to get in the gap, the space between. And instead of holding onto our pound of flesh, our record of wrong, instead of having the bait of Satan and the spear of offense, let's forgive. Let's give mercy and grace. Let's have some understanding. Which brings us to the sixth principle. Lose your remote control in the grateful channel. You know, our feet and our eyes are connected. We move in the direction of our focus, and we focus in the direction of our movement. And God told me about 12 years ago, you're going through this world too heavy. You got to lighten your load. And I thought he meant I had too many storage units around the country. And he did mean that too. But I was holding on to too much pain, too much hurt, too much unforgiveness, using my past to generate a future. But what it did is it never allowed me to get out of my past and change it so I had a better future. So I had to decide to lighten the load, get rid of my pound of flesh, get rid of my record long, forgive, accept and appreciate everything for the gift that it can be, expect nothing and accept everything. Peace comes from gratefulness. Remember, we have a reticular activating system, an unconscious focal center of our brain. And whatever we park it on is what we see more of. And that's what your reticular activating system does. It focuses on those things that are important. The world wants you to go on the victim channel. The world wants you to see everybody's race. We're now openly a racist country. Only thing that matters is people's skin color. And Dr. King gave his life and gave his death so that people would not be judged by their skin color, but by their choices. That's what character is. Characters are choices. Do not judge people by the color of the skin, a choice they had nothing to do with. But he says, go ahead and judge them based on their choices, which is what character is. And yet we live in a world that says, is bass-ackwards. Says, don't worry about what someone's done. Just worry about the color of their skin. We've got to just get rid of all that. We're being destroyed and go on the grateful channel. When you park your tuner on ESPN, you're going to expect to be watching sports. When you park your tuner on SpongeBob, you're going to expect to see who lives in the pineapple under a sea, and Gary's there too. And so when you focus on the victim channel, just like when my wife focused on the baby channel, she saw babies and pregnant people everywhere. It didn't make them appear. They were always there. But until she focused the channel on it, her unconscious mind did not know it was important. What are you telling your unconscious mind is important? Are you telling the victim's important? Are you telling poor me's important? Are you telling them life ain't no fair is important? Or are you telling your unconscious mind that grateful is important? I can tell you right now, my childhood caused me 4 decades of trauma and caused a lot of other people a lot of pain. And I can tell you today, that's not who I am today. If I saw my dad's dead, I buried him a few years back, with tears in my eyes, I would embrace my dad and say, thank you, Dad. Thank you. Thank you for the beatings. Thank you that you were alcoholic. Thank you that you abandoned me. Thank you that I never felt loved. Thank you. Because I'm today grateful for those things. Because those things created such pain in me that I wanted to fix myself. It was such pain in me that I wanted to be for other people what I didn't have. Someone who noticed my pain. Someone who cared about my pain. Someone who cared enough about my pain to not let me go back to that pain. Someone that would show me a toolbox that would help me change that pain into purpose. To change that worst case scenario into my superpower. To take my kryptonite and to make it my power source. See, warrior, the battle's in the mind. But it's a battle that you've been built to win. So you have all the tools you need to fight the good fight. However, if you do not know how to properly use a tool or to efficiently wield your weapon, then they can be used against you. My job at wayofwarrior.training is to equip warriors. This is the tremendous benefit of my 3-day intensive trainings. I prefer the full immersion learning process. I fully immerse you for 2.5 days. You see, and the reason it works so well is because I can control the environment, which creates the desired behavior, which deeply affects the identity of our participants. And in just 48 hours, we are able to create a proven environment to generate massive change in your life. You get to spend 2.5 days working on you. One of the most sound investments someone can make is in themselves, in understanding themselves and why they do what they do. Go to wayofwarrior.training to learn more. Today's helping of wisdom has been transforming your mind. 6 key principles of a warrior mindset. Let me remind you of the 3 key takeaways from today's podcast. Number 1, to understand where the battle is. There are battlefields all around us, but the greatest battlefield is the mind. Number 2, the understanding that we have more control over our experience than most people can understand. We are at cause, not effect. And number 3, the main course. I told you I would give you 6 key principles that will help create or reinforce the mindset needed as a warrior. We got to get our minds right, warrior. The battle is in the mind. Thank you for listening to Way of Warrior, Fighting the Good Fight podcast. For more information about the life-changing trainings, coaching, or to connect with me directly, please visit wayofwarrior.training. That's wayofwarrior.training. Until next time, remember, when you live your life like it matters, it does. It is Way of Warrior.